33:45:78, and this is Steve Fruitman with you, and this is the second hour of the program. I have in the studio with me Arthur Zimmerman. How you doing, Arthur?
Not bad.
Nice to have you here, and I'm not going to say all the CBC stuff to you, I promise. You've been doing extensive research on Canadian bands from the 1920s and 30s in your organization that you belong to, maybe not you personally, everything, of course, but the Canadian Antiques Phonographic Society, CAPS.
CAPS.
And, of course, you've got one of our great CIUT personalities, Colin McRae, with you in that organization as well, right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about CAPS and what you do in that organization with Canadian music.
Well, it's an organization of collectors of records, collectors of gramophones and phonographs, and collectors of phonographic-related ephemera. We meet seven times or so a year, and we produce a magazine called the Antique Phonograph News six times a year. What you've seen, the article on George Wade, is in the latest issue of the Antique Phonograph News. It can be got online, too, by the way. We'll talk about that later,
maybe. Okay. Tell us a little bit about your research that you've done on George Wade and his Cornhuskers and how you got involved in researching these guys.
Yeah, it started... I belonged to a writer's group at one point, and I brought in things I was working on, an article on Luigi Romanelli, an article on George White, the dancer. And one of the members brought in a photograph of 11 guys in the CFRB studio, undated, and said three of my uncles, the Cormiers, were violinists in this group, and George Wade was the caller. It was called George Wade and his Cornhuskers. What can you tell me about this outfit? And so with this picture, and that's all we had at that point, we started going through newspaper databases and asking people questions and looking into things like the Encyclopedia of Music in Canada and other resources.
You've sort of explored the music of the era, and there wasn't a lot that was documented about any of the bands of the era, maybe except for... Guy Lombardo or something like that.
Not in Canada, no. The American ones, of course, were documented. There were American country dance bands on the radio in the States from about 1924 and Grand Ole Opry about 1925. But George Wade and his Cornhuskers, who appeared on CFRB first in June 1928, were the first Canadians to be on doing country music on the air. And he was very difficult to track. Nobody remembers him, basically, except you, I know.
Yeah.
And we've been searching for 2 years now, finding information about George Wade, did a timeline to try to sort out his life. We just 2 days ago found a relative after 2 years of searching. And the relative, we hope, will come up with some good information for us.
Yeah. Okay, so he recorded mostly in the early 30s, right?
He recorded in 31, 33, 34, 35 at the RCA Victor Studios in Montreal. So they're electric recordings. And they're in
as opposed to acoustic recordings,
yeah,
which were, you know, sang into cones. Really.
Yeah, that ended about 1925, 26. Yeah. And they were published in Canada. They're fairly common. He was very, very popular.
He was on RCA Records.
RCA Records, but he was also broadcast countrywide over a network that came out of the Gooderman Wartz radio station in the King Edward Hotel from the early 30s, and then over the CRBC, the Canadian Radio Broadcasting Commission from 1933. They're all across Canada. Everybody knew them. One report in 33 was they had, in a short period of time, like 6 or 8 weekly broadcasts, they had 6,000 letters from people. And George estimated that almost every rural person in the country was listening to his music and dancing. They'd bring in the neighbors, whoever had a radio would bring in the neighbors in and roll up the carpets and dance.
Now, they also made a lot of money.
Yes, he did. He did.
Although he died pretty poor.
We don't
really
know for sure.
Yeah.
for sure we don't. We know he didn't leave much, but he died in the Queen Street Mental Institution in 1975, and we don't know whether money was extracted from his estate for that mm-hmm. or not in those days. Haven't been able to find that out.
When I had the late, great Graham Townsend on my program back in 19, I guess it was when...
97. Yeah.
You know better than me. Okay, so I had him on. We did a whole show on George Wade and his Cornhuskers, and he had almost all of the recordings, all right. of the 78s. He was, right. I think he was missing two. I was asking him, did the band stay pretty stable over the years, like Don Messer's band, where he had the same personnel basically for decades? And he said no, because George used to not pay the people very well and sometimes rip them off, actually. It was the exact words that Townsend used.
Yeah, that was Townsend's experience from the 50s onward. But the personnel did change from the middle 30s onward. We don't know why. He seemed to have a fairly stable group up until about 33. Then he did a tour out west in 34 and almost all new personnel. And we have no idea why that was, why he should have changed personnel for that tour.
Should we hear a song right now and then we'll talk a bit yeah. more about him?
Yeah.
Because we're going to spend the whole hour discussing this phenomenon of George Wade and his Cornhuskers. Any particular cut you want me to play?
Well, let's start with one where George calls.
Uh-huh.
Very flat voice, very strangely flat voice.
Any particular song you want?
Well, maybe Rock Valley or the Mason's Apron.
Mason's Apron's probably a good one.
Okay.
Okay, so before we play it, just tell me a bit more about the research that you've done, and you say that you've just about uncovered a family member. And how did you go about doing this research?
That's a long story.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
Well, it's through newspaper databases, through the internet, through talking to people like you. You came up with some information for us. You came up with Graham Townsend's broadcast for yeah. us, which helped. We have found booklets of square dance calls that were published under George Wade's name, along with a guy named Harry German. And we went to this Canada Census. We also had a very valuable colleague at the Archives of New Brunswick who came up with a great deal of vital information for us. So casting out in every direction, following every little string that yeah. turns up, you pull the string and
you couldn't have done this happens. Without the internet, right?
No.
Yeah.
Impossible without the internet. And you're without the newspaper databases.
Mm-hmm.
Because we found advertising for George's dances. We found pictures of George Wade and his Cornhuskers in the paper. And little bits of biography, not much.
You want to go to a square dance?
Sure. This was recorded, as far as we can tell, in 1931.
Right hand round with a girl you swung and balanced to that next little girl. rolling, rolling along. All right, stand round with the girl you strong and balance. Do that next little girl and all come down on the old plank floor. And swing with the girl before you all. All right, stand round with the girl you strong and balance. All of your own little doll and all take a dance and a tamaracker down on the old white pine. Hey, you swing your girl, I'll swing mine. Right and left on the head to the hall. The right and left two on the side of the hall. Hell, the money left for the corners all. And right to your honey and a grand change all. And you right foot up when your left foot down. And your little foot up when your big foot down. You jump right up when you come right down. Now, well, the money shoots back all around the haystack. Lady, run the haystack. All chai, chow, chow. Hey, and I jump right up when I come right down. And jump up, crooked, and I come down straight. And I swing your honey in the garden gate. All swing out in your places all and roll them around pretty good to the floor. All join hands and sit here fall. Oh, once more pretty good to the floor. And I thank your ladies, that'll be all. And promenade and you know where and I don't care.
Mason's Apron at George Wayton's Cornhuskers. You say that's from 1931,
31,
Arthur?
31, according to Jack Litchfield's chronology. Jack Litchfield is a member of CAPS as well, and he has done some wonderful chronologies of Canadian recordings.
Especially on RCA.
Well, RCA and Columbia both so far, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's working on Brunswick next.
So tell us a bit about the history of George Wade. You traced him back to Prince Edward Island, did you not?
We traced him actually back to his great-grandfather, who came over from Great Britain, was born on shipboard in 1807. Our George was born in 1897, December 23rd, but the date seems to jump around a bit. He was the son of another George. And we
But they spelt the name differently, right?
They spelt Wade and Wait differently. It was W-A-I-T and then W-A-I-D-E and then W-A-I-D.
Which makes it interesting for you to track down.
That made it just about impossible to track down. We found his baptism record in Roman Catholic Church. We found names of his brothers and sisters. And we also discovered, at least our colleague in New Brunswick discovered, that George turned up with his mother in Manitoba in 1906. And the usual story you get about George Wade was that he came from out west, but he was born in Summerside, PEI, and his parents separated and his mother left for Souris, we don't know why, about 1903. She was calling herself a widow, but we know that her husband was still alive. He lived until 1914. And she remarried a fellow named Charles Peter Pennells in Souris. He was a lineman on the CPR. And we're kind of wondering whether young George may have had violin lessons in Souris because his stepfather was employed. And George later told the press that he had been calling do-si-dos since the age of 12, which would be 1909. So presumably he was involved in music at that age, and presumably he was studying violin at some level. Then we found him through ancestry trying to join up with the Canadian Overseas Expeditionary Force in 1915. He had been a member of the 12th Manitoba Dragoons in Souris, but he was rejected. We got a description of him, a physical description of him from that. He was 5'9", 5'10", medium complexion, blue eyes. They rejected him as medically unfit. Maybe he had flat feet. We don't know that for sure. It doesn't say. The Manitoba Census in 1916 lists him as a printer and press officer. And then he turned up living in Sarnia in 1917 and reapplied for the Expeditionary Force at Windsor in May 17. And then he gave his name as Wade, W-A-I-D-E. His employment as a clerk, but mechanic is crossed out. And that turns up later in his career as an auto mechanic of sorts. Was accepted, assigned to the Signal Training Depot in Ottawa to be a sapper. And we got his
military. What's a sapper?
he would have been somebody who laid out mines or did sort of grunt work.
Yeah, he didn't tap maple trees.
Not usually. No.
Okay.
And we found him going to England, and we found that he had persistent health problems with his eyes. He had a bad case of nystagmus, which is very curious. That's where your eyes flip back and forth quickly. And he had throat irritations that he said he'd had before. Never got across the channel into the game in France. And there's no indication in the Expeditionary Force record that he was a musician, which is a bit curious. He was struck off service in March 1919, headed back to Canada, demobbed in Kingston, and then presumably back to Souris. But he said later on that he had worked in the bush in Northern Ontario, and he'd witnessed square dances where there are up to 4,000 people dancing. So that makes us wonder whether he was directly involved in the square dances, either as a caller or perhaps as a musician.
And where in Northern Ontario would
Doesn't
they have
say.
A place where they would have 4,000 people in those days?
Some small town with a lumber camp,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then he turns up in Toronto in 1924. We've tracked him definitively from 1925, working as a chauffeur, which we figure is a driver mechanic for the post office. And one day, wearing his postman's cap, he walked into the old CFRB studio, which was then in the Massey Mansion on Jarvis Street. It was an art gallery and other things. And told the co-managers that he had a popular barn dance group and he wanted to be on the radio. He asked too much money. They whittled him down. And his first appearance on CFRB was on June 2nd, 1928, as the old-time dance program. And that continued as old-time dance for a couple more weeks, and then as Wade's old-time dance, and then on October 26th, the name George Wade and his Cornhuskers first appears in the press. Yeah, and we have a photo of George from 1929, which is in the article that you can get online, which shows him, it's a very foggy, blotchy photograph, but he appears to be carrying a violin in his left hand and a bow. And you said on Back to the Sugar Camp that he was a caller and a harmony fiddler. So this,
according to Graham Townsend, yes.
Yeah, so this is the only direct evidence that we have of George with a violin.
Now, he was also a band leader, as you say, and square dance caller,
yes.
Organizer. But he had numerous fiddle players, so he was never the primary fiddle player in his band,
no,
was he?
The fiddles were his trademark. He had three relatives named Cormier from New Brunswick. There was Laurie and Bill and Francis Cormier, all excellent fiddle players. And then he picked up Jean Carignan as a 15-year-old kid on the streets of Montreal. Carignan was working for a bootmaker.
We'll get into that in a minute. I want to play another cut first, because that's a whole story, right?
Oh, right, yeah. But we presume that once the Cormiers came along, good fiddle players, that George was totally outclassed, and he just put down his fiddle and stuck to calling after that.
And running the band.
And running the band, yeah.
You want to hear the Little Brown Jug?
Yeah. In this one, George is doing his singing call. He's got a very strangely flat voice for a caller, and, of course, even worse for a singer. Reminds me of the Canadian actor Ned Sparks, who had a very low, kind of flat, expressionless voice. I wouldn't have expected it from a square dance caller.
Did this sort of style, because he was on radio and on records, did it influence a lot of other square dance callers to do the same kind of, you don't know that, eh?
No idea.
Uh-huh. No. I wouldn't doubt if it did.
Oh. Yeah. He was so popular, it must have. And he also had a practice later on of inviting locals who were attending his square dances to come up and call dances at the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
So they must have imitated him there, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm going to hear right now the Little Brown Jug.
at your life, we have some fun. You and me, little brown sugar, I love thee. You and me, little brown sugar, I love thee. You swing with your partners all around, swing your honey all over the hall. The head couple around to the right, and you balance there with all your might. Chaucy by and address your opposite, Chaucy back and address your own. Turn your opposite half alone. Now the girl you call your own, now your opposite, don't be afraid. Take your own and around to the next you Chaucy by. Chaucy back and address your own, turn your opposite half alone. Now the girl you call your own, now with your opposite, don't be afraid. Take your own and around to the last, Chaucy by and address your opposite, Chaucy back and address your own. Turn your opposite half alone, now with the girl you call your own. Now with your opposite, don't be afraid. Take your own and home you go. Hail money left for the corners all, right to your partner, grand change all over the hall. As I go marching to my farm, I take little brown jug under my arm, I sit him down on the shady tree, little brown jug and I love thee. You and me, little brown jug and I love thee. You and me, little brown jug and I love thee. You turn them in and turn them out to the good old scout. Pull around to the right, balance there when you do it right. Chaucy by, address your opposite. Chaucy back and address your own. Turn your opposite half alone. Now with a girl you call your own. Now with your opposite, don't be afraid. Take your own and around to the next you Chaucy by. Chaucy back and address your own. Turn your opposite half alone. Now with a girl you call your own. And now with your opposite, don't be afraid. Take your own and around to the last. Chaucy by, address your opposite. Chaucy back and address your own. Here's your opposite half alone. Now with a girl you call your own. Now your opposite, don't be afraid. Take your own and home you go. Hail the money left for the corners all. Right to your partner, grand change all over the hall. You that makes my friends and foes, it's you that makes my big red nose. Yet I guess before we go, we'll tip her up and down she goes. You and me, little brown jug, and I love thee. You and me, little brown jug, and I love thee. You all shrink in your places all, and roll your honey for the good to the floor.
Thank you.
old recordings there from the 1930s, George Wade and his Cornhuskers. And of course, you can hear all the surface noise on that one, eh?
Yeah. That recording was made in 1933, according to Jack Litchfield's chronology, and The Little Brown Jug from 1935, his last recording, we think.
That was his last one, eh?
He probably picked up songs wherever he went. His story was that he had a repertoire of 800 songs. Could you imagine?
Yeah, so he's probably picking, especially for the recordings, he's probably picking ones that were more up-to-date and popular for the day, right?
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about Jean Carignan. Of course, before you do, just a little bit of information about him. He was just this young, amazing fiddle player that blossomed and really came to his own in the 1950s. He started recording for Folkways Records and various other American record companies because in that time there was very little Canadian recording companies. And nobody wanted to record a fiddler, a French-Canadian fiddler. So he went down to the States, New England mostly, and recorded. And throughout the 60s and 70s, he became one of the biggest things in Quebec. And he passed away, I think, around 1987.
Right.
So he started his career with George Wade and his Cornhuskers.
Yeah, there are a couple of stories about him. And we gravitated to one, that he was a shoemaker's apprentice in Montreal. And that he used to take his lunch breaks out on the street playing his fiddle. And George, whether on tour or just passing through, heard him and scooped him up for the band. And he played, Carignan played in Wade's band between 1931 and about 1936, 37. He's supposed to have made one recording as a featured soloist with George Wade, and I think we're going to hear that.
Yeah.
Wade always had three or four excellent fiddle players in his band. And you were talking about Don Messer and his Islanders. Messer's band also had a bunch of fiddle players out front. And people think, and we think, that Messer, in effect, copied Wade's formula for having a lot of fiddle players out front. And you could hear them in that last cut as well.
Yeah. Okay, so Jean Carignan comes into the band. Now, the other stories that I've heard, there's two different album covers of Jean Carignan that have the story, but they have the dates different. One says 1933, one says 1931, and the dynamics are a bit different. However, Graham Townsend told me a totally different story, and that was that Jean Carignan's dad, right, he wasn't a musician, he wanted his son to be seen and heard by George Wade, and apparently when he was about 11 years old, that was when George Wade first met him.
Right.
But he, of course, didn't get into the band for another 3 or 4 years.
Anybody's guess.
Yeah.
Which is true. The recording that he soloed in, The Devil's Dream, was made, according to Jack Litchfield's chronology, in 1931. So Carignan would have been 15 then.
So you're saying that Jean Carignan was included in all of the George Wade repertoire?
We presume he was. But the funny thing is, whenever Wade's personnel is listed in the newspapers, which is where we found them, Carignan's not there.
And yet we know he toured across the country.
Right, right.
Interesting.
But never included in the contemporary listings of the musicians.
Do you think it might have had to do it with the fact that he was a minor?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I don't know whether that was such a big deal in those days.
You know, the New Brunswick Lumberjacks band of Don Messer also had the young Frederick Ned Landry playing, but they called them the trio, the Backwoods Trio, and they never put his name on the marquee for years. So, you know, in fact, he used to have to ride in the trailer with all the instruments because they didn't have enough room in the car for him. He was just this lanky kid, right? But he was in the band. He played with them for years. But he never got any recognition until later on. Mm-hmm. And he was known as Frederick Landry. And finally, when it came time to put his name on the marquee, Don Messer said at that time, "We got to change your name to Ned. Frederick is too big for the marquee."
Now, how old was he when they finally recognized him and used his name?
I think he was about 17 or 18 because he started playing with Messer when he was about 12 or 13 years old. So maybe there was some issue with him being a minor. I don't know.
Unless Carignan came and went, too, in those days.
Quite possibly. I mean, some of these people had bands that they used for certain things.
Right.
You know, if they were traveling or touring certain parts of the country, they'd call upon certain musicians. But the Cormiers, you say, from New Brunswick, were living in Toronto.
Yes.
And they also played various instruments. Like a lot of these guys played saxophones and everything, right?
So did Jean-Kieran Young. He said he played clarinet and sax in the band because they played foxtrots and waltzes, popular music of the day as well.
But never recorded any of it.
No.
Okay, it's time to hear some music. Here's Devil's Dream. Some Soldier's Joy for you, George Wade and his Cornhuskers. Speaking with Arthur Zimmerman, a researcher with an organization that is called the Canadian Antiques Phonographic Society, and it's located here in Toronto. And if you want more information, Arthur, how can you get a hold of CAPS?
They have a website, which is capsnews.org, capsnews.org, and that'll give you the introduction to it.
And they look after every aspect of the phonograph area, do they?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Now, Jean Carignon was born in 1916.
Right.
And so he would have been like 15 years old, I guess, when he joined, if in case it was 1931.
That recording was made in 1931.
So he must have been in it then, yeah. So,
and people said he was a fantastic fiddle player. He could play anything. And he couldn't read music, apparently, as well.
Well, you had people like Yehudi Menuhin saying that he was the most natural-born violinist, and he didn't use the word fiddle player, that he'd ever heard. And the stories of Jean Carignon, which are true, talk about the fact that he was a taxicab driver in Montreal, and he would play Carnegie Hall, and the next day he was back to driving cab in Montreal, you know, where nobody really knew him in Montreal except for the Bobby Hill Show, which was a radio program that took place in Montreal back in the early 50s, and Bobby Hill used to have Jean Carignon in his band at the time. Mm-hmm. But very little known about him, you know, before that. Now, who is Pete the Mountain Boy?
Good question. He turns up about 1932, 33 in George Wade's band. He was a yodeler and, I guess, a singer. There is a track of him singing in the George Wade collection.
Do you know what song it is?
Offhand, I don't remember. But not a very good singer, either. And he also used to tell jokes along with George in between dances. So a general entertainer. And the people were nuts about him.
Pete the Mountain Boy.
Yep.
Pete McGinn.
Yeah.
Do you know where he came from and where he went to?
No. There are too many strings to follow, Steve. We follow as many as we can. that we didn't.
Okay,
it was also Red Hughes, the Red River Cowboy, who we have not been able to follow either. Another singer with Wade.
Various times he had, you know, several musicians in the band, and sometimes he had a whole bunch, maybe more than a dozen people in the band, right?
Right, yeah. Sometimes it was 5 or 6, and sometimes it was 10 or 12.
Ian Bell, a Canadian singer-songwriter from Port Dover, Ontario, who used to be in a performing band called Muddy York with Ann Letterman back in the 80s, recorded a song off his CD called Shallow Water back in 2007. And it's a real long song. It takes about 9 or 10 minutes long, right? And it's all about George Wade and his Cornhuskers performing at Plater Hall with Pete the Mountain Boy.
Oh.
You haven't heard that song, eh?
No.
I'll have to get it to you.
Please.
Yeah.
And he performed all over Toronto, George did. Lansdowne Hall and Plater Hall and everywhere. Every week he would be on 3, 4, 5 times in the evenings playing dances.
So you recorded about, 26, 28 songs, something like
26
that?
26 sides for Victor,
26 sides. Then he never recorded again. So what happened to George Wade?
He got me.
So you don't know what happened to him during the 40s?
Well, during the 40s, we tracked him. First of all, we lost him in 1935. And then our colleague in New Brunswick found him living in Montreal and performing in Montreal for about 3 years. And then he returned to Toronto and began performing in these local halls all over Toronto, all the way through the 40s and 50s and into the early 60s. He even had an extensive gig at the Palais Royal, which surprised us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, he was doing the two types of music.
Yeah.
So, also, like I mentioned Graham Townsend earlier, and his dad used to play with George Wade and his Cornhuskers back in the 30s as well.
Right.
He was a harmonica player.
And made a record with them, too.
Did, and I can't remember which one. Was it Acrobat's Reel?
No, it was. Let me see if I can find it on the list.
Okay.
I should know this.
You should know this.
Yeah, I should.
I should know this. We'll find
Arkansas Traveler.
Was it the Arkansas Traveler?
That was it.
So maybe we'll play that. The Arkansas Traveler, of course, a very well-known American fiddle tune, and it was used for a lot of square dances. Another thing we have to mention, you know, about square dances in Canada as opposed to the U.S., the Canadian fiddlers love jigs as well as reels, and in the States, square dances are almost entirely reels. 4/4 tunes, where here they use a lot of the 6/8 tunes. But the Arkansas Traveler, again, is a 4/4 tune, and it features, as I say, Fred Townsend, who was a Bernardo kid. He was brought over by the Bernardo organization that used to abuse kids in Canada a lot. They used to bring over orphans from England to work on farms and stuff like that. And so Fred was one of these. He was one of the lucky ones. He actually got put into a showbiz family that were into circus acts. So he learned to play the mouth organ at the time. And, of course, that led to him introducing his son at the age of about 11 or 12, back around 1949-50, to Don Messer. And Don Messer then recorded the Princess Elizabeth Two-Step, written by about 11-year-old Graham Townsend at that time. And Graham eventually went on to play with George Waite and his Cornhuskers, and he had something to say about how he died.
Yes.
Should we listen to that now?
Sure.
Okay, so this is
from your program in 1997 with Graham Townsend.
And it's Graham talking about the death of George Waite. There it is. I'll set it up. Here it is.
Graham, when did George Waite die?
He died about 16, 17 years ago. Eleanor always wanted to go and meet him, and it was rather unfortunate the way she had to meet him. He was in the place on Queen Street, of course, in Toronto here, the mental institution, and we went and spent about an hour there that day, and out of the hour, he recognized me for about 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it was quite sad, because knowing the history that that he had behind him and what he had done for Canadian old-time music, yet to see him in that condition, it really bothered me because, as I said earlier, that I had worked with him a number of times.
That's from 1997. Interesting, you know, because we know where he is from now. We know where he ended up. But there's still so much space in between that we don't know much about.
True. And we don't know a great deal about his personality either. Is another problem.
Mm-hmm. Except that he didn't like to pay his performers a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to tell that story?
Well, Graham told the story, and, you know, he mentioned how he would put envelopes on their chairs, and when they came back from the performance, the envelopes would be gone, and Waite would say, well, I put them there, and that was their pay.
Yeah.
And people used to get really pissed off with him and quit the band.
They'd quit, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Tends to make me believe there was money problems with George Waite. I wouldn't think it would be greed to do a thing like that. It would be more money problems.
Funny thing, we found him in the 40s running a dog kennel in Port Credit. He was raising Doberman Pinschers, which surprised the heck out of us. So maybe his money went into that. He bought a prize Doberman from the States, who he called Shad. And Shad would clamp onto your arm like a vice and never let go if George gave the command. That story continued from, well, through the middle 40s, I guess, and then it kind of petered away. We don't know what happened to the dog enterprise after that.
It's amazing how many things he was into.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
We found him in, starting in 54 at Lansdowne Hall, and then Plater's Hall, and then the Palais Royal, 55, 56, 57. We didn't find him playing. We found him in Masaryk Auditorium in 58 and 59, and then nothing. Nothing, no advertisements in the newspaper until 1966, when there's one show at Plater's Hall, and then he disappears.
Plater's Hall is still there, folks. Right. Broadview and Danforth on the south east corner above the Tim Hortons is the Plater Building Society. Mm-hmm. And the second floor would have been where they had the big dances.
Right.
Mark Kenny and his orchestra used to play there. Don Messer and the Islanders actually played there, as well as George Waite and his Cornhuskers. We're going to hear that tune that we picked out right now, the Arkansas Traveler, that features Fred Townsend on the harmonica. Listen to the 334578, All Vinyl Radio Show here on CIUT, also heard on CHMR FM 93.5 in St. John's, Newfoundland, Labrador, as well as 91.3 FM CFBW, otherwise known as Blue Water Radio, up in Hanover, Ontario. And Arthur Zimmerman, my guest right now. We're talking George Wade and his Cornhuskers from the 1930s. Now, I've got this album. There is a CD put out of George Wade and his Cornhuskers. That was put out by the Barn Dance Historical Society up in Wingham, Ontario. And these recordings came from the collection of Lynn Russworm. And he claims here, this is interesting, that they recorded 13 records, so 26 songs, 26 sides. However, he's missing two of them on the CD. And the CD is available, well, was available. I don't know if it still is. It came out in 2006. You can look up thebarndance.ca for the Barn Dance Historical Society. The only thing I didn't like about this CD, as opposed to a lot of the songs that you've been hearing on the program, mine come from the tape recording that Graham Townsend gave me of his records. And on the CD, they cleaned it up a little too much. You know, they made it sound a little bit too unrecord-like, took away a lot of the ambience.
Right. They're also available on the National Archives website.
As MP3s?
Yeah.
That are downloadable, mm-hmm. free. So is it virtual gramophone, I think, you go to?
Yes.
Well, Arthur, thanks ever so much. You know, do you have any last words about the research and everything you've done and maybe the most recent meeting of a member of his family?
Well, we have about a month before we have to submit part two of our George Wade article, and we're still finding information about him. We just found out about his commitment to the Queen Street Mental Institution in 1970, so we have that doped out. We have just found out a bit about his wife, and we have found a Cormier relative, and we have found a Wade relative, and we're hoping to get more information from them.
So this isn't finished, this work?
It's still in progress, very much in progress. And I hope you can link up the website for the first part of the article with your website.
Absolutely. It'll be on my website, www.backtothesugarcamp.com. Probably tonight or tomorrow, I'll do the playlists up. And if you want playlists sent to you, just email me, steve@backtothesugarcamp.com, and I'll mail you out the weekly playlists from the program every week. So on the website also are the programs that are downloadable. My archive shows are there. Remember, www.backtothesugarcamp.com. And I'm on Twitter @sugarcamp2. And I tweet as I play. So thanks ever so much for coming in and sharing this information with us and about CAPS.
Thank you for the invite.
You're welcome. And I definitely will be getting into this CD that you guys put out back in, when, 2000? And well, 2000, exactly, yeah. 2000. Colin Bray, our Sugarfoot Stomp program host, has done the liner notes too, and there's recordings from, what, 1922 to 1930.
It's Canadian hot jazz music from the 20s and 30s.
Yeah. And I'm going to be
which is available.
That.
It's still available from CAPS. If you go onto the website, you can see where you can order the CD.
Well, you know what? We got a wedding to go to. And Haste to the Wedding is the name of the tune we're going to play to go out with this week on the program. Next week is a different show. I have no idea what I'm going to do next week on 33-45-78. I'm just going to look through my records and pick out some really cool ones. Take care, and we'll see you next week on 33-45-78.
Your furnished coat is a dress, and join your hands away to the west, away to the west. Now halfway round and lead right on, and lead right on. I didn't say back, you lead right on. And break and string and all the string and roll your partners, all the string and your braces all. Our head couple around to the right and join your hands and circle the half, and right on the blue and right on the six, and right on the six across the hall. Right on the back, right on the back on the same old track, right on the back on the same old track. Go round to the next and join your hands and circle the half. The ladies don't see Valvinette. The gents in the river and don't get wet. The right hand lady, right hand round, lefty or lone and promenade round to the last of all and join your hands and circle the half. Now right on the blue and right on the six across the hall and right on the back on the same old track. And don't come down on her lily white feet and hurry up boys and do it up neat, now do it up neat. And all the string in your place is all the string for the good of the floor. And the last couple around to the right and join your paddy circle a half and right on the blue and a right on the six. Now right on the six and right on the back. Now right on the back and you don't get fixed and hurry up boys and do it up neat. Now shake your big feet, keep trying to the fiddle but right on the blue and right on the back. Go around to the next and join your hands and circle a half. The ladies don't see Ballinette, the jumps in the river and don't get wet. The right-hand lady, right-hand round, lefty or lone and promenade round. And up to the last of all and balance there. And join your hands and circle a half and a right on the two and a right on the six. And a right on the back and the same old track. And don't come down on her lily white feet and hurry up boys and don't get mixed. And a right on the two and a right on the six. You string your girl, I'll string mine. The hearty you string and the better you feel. Now element left of that corner's all, and element right's your own little ball. Oh, do-si-do with that corner's all, right hand apart and your grand chain. Your right foot up and your left foot down, your little foot up and your big foot down. You jump right up and you come right down, your hand over hand, your heel over heel. The hearty you dance, the better you feel. Now all stringing your face is all, and stringing your parts is all, and stringing your face is all, and roll them around, and roll them around. The hardier string and the better you feel, and all the